And that was the Music Till Dawn program, the opening of a show in the autumn of 1965. And we're delighted to have with us on our Those Were the Days program this afternoon a man who entertained millions of people from WBBM in Chicago overnight with his famous Music Till Dawn program. Our guest is Jay Andres. Jay, welcome.
Thank you, Chuck. It's nice being here, too. It's really a great place here.
Thank you.
I really enjoy this. You know, talking about Music Till Dawn, that describing that scene, I remember doing that very well because I used to love, well, I still do, loved autumn. Mm-hmm. And coming in at night, you'd have a chance to go over all the activities of the day, you know, and sit there and ruminate for a while and go on the air. So it was just stuff off the top of the head, really.
But you could set the scene so, I guess, poetically is the right word.
I would like to think that, yes.
Sure, yeah. Well, you would do this night after night. When did you first start doing Music Till Dawn on WBBM?
I think it was in March of 1953. Mm-hmm. Bill Wells had been doing matinee at midnight. Mm-hmm. John McCormick had done it, and he went back down to St. Louis. Bill Wells came in and took over from him after a couple of other people. And then I heard that American Airlines was coming in to do a program of classical music all night, and I thought, well, I know classical music as well as Bill Wells, or probably better than he does, so I mm-hmm. made up a resume and sent it to the program director, and that's when it all began.
Did you send a tape along with that?
No, I didn't. I just wrote down what I would do and all that.
Oh. And they said from that printed resume they hired you for that.
Well, they knew what I did on the air because they sent it to Al. No, it wasn't Al Bland at the time. He was program director later, but the American Air. Oh, and they had to hear me. Mm-hmm. I didn't make up a tape that I remember, but I know they heard me because the American Airlines people I knew were the ones, of course, that made the final decision.
Now, you were on staff at BBM?
I was on staff doing everything. As a matter of fact, I was working early mornings. Mm-hmm. I would introduce Julian Bentley and Harry Campbell, two great guys. Mm-hmm. Julian Bentley especially. He never had the kind of humor displayed on in front of the microphone that he had off the mic. He was a very funny man, very, very witty, whimsical.
He always seemed very straight-laced and
he seemed that way, but he was kind of raunchy sometimes.
Oh, really?
He was very nice fellow.
Oh,
very
I love
nice.
To hear that stuff.
Oh, Julian could tell a joke with the best of them. Yeah. He and Harry Campbell would tell some gross things to each other in the morning while they were between records and not records, but between the commercials. It was fun being. And then I'd introduce Paul Gibson in the morning. Mm-hmm. He was the world's nicest man. Mm-hmm. Really was. Mm-hmm. You get this persona of people on the air, and you make up in your mind, which is a nice thing about radio, of course, what people are like. But off the air, they're a little different, you know. But Paul was as nice off the air as he could be nasty sometimes on the air, to women maybe especially.
He often infuriated the listeners.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. But that was in his head. Mm-hmm. He did that purposely, of course.
When did you first start at BBM?
I started at the end of 1949 when they had that incident at the New Year's football game with Art Mercier and Bob Venables, and something was said on the air, so they let them go, and then they had auditions, and they had about 250 people come in, and Jack Callahan and I were the ones who were hired.
Ah. And then you were just general staff.
Just general staff. So
doing
everything. Okay. Doing just about everything between station breaks and going into the network and coming out of the network.
Well, you were with BBM then from the Wrigley Building studios to McClurg Court.
As a matter of fact, we did the Music Till Dawn show there for at least a year at the Wrigley Building before moving over to the arena. Mm-hmm. And it was fun because the setup was so nice. They'd have things in the basement going on, you know, engineering things, and then up in the studio. Mm-hmm. And then we'd have, of course, had a musician running the turntables. So we'd have a kind of a party every night. I'd bring food in. I love to cook. Uh-huh. So I'd bring food in. And I remember one story I was telling a friend of mine, Al McKinstry, who's retired now, but who was my engineer primarily. Mm-hmm. I was reminding him of the time I brought in a whole big glass thing of shrimp de jong, and you know that's a lot of garlic.
Yeah.
And we put it on a hot plate in the studio, and it broke.
Oh.
And it was about 3 in the morning, and of course we had those garlic fumes and shrimp fumes everywhere, up and down the halls, everywhere. And if Les Atlas had come in and smelled that, he would have fired everyone. So the janitors and whatnot, the maintenance people, turned on the air conditioning to get everything out, and we... Apparently they accomplished it because nothing ever happened. But it was great fun back in those days.
That was still the era when there were many, many live programs coming on.
Oh, yes.
Things from the network, but also, well, BBM, of course, did a tremendous amount of live local live music programs and comedy shows with the Gold Coast, as we played.
George Watson and the King's Jesters and Gold Coast, that was a great show, too. Mm-hmm. George was another wonderful man. Mm-hmm. He had a great sense of humor off the air and on the air, of course. And they would pull all kind of tricks on him. I don't know if you ever heard that story about one of the engineers. George had a habit of coming in at the very last minute. He knew a script and everything, and even he could even read a script, Cole, without much worry. So the King's Jesters knew that George could do it, and they had no problems, but the engineers would get very excited. So one time they set up a huge ladder and put his mic way up on top. And George came in. He had to read a script from way up on top. But that wouldn't faze George. He probably enjoyed it. No way. Nice guy.
There were so many things that happened at WBBM through the years, and you were really a part of it. When Music Till Dawn came on, this was a kind of a, almost a, I guess I want to say a franchise type of a program, wasn't it? American Airlines sponsored the all-night program in many different markets with different local performers.
C.R. Smith, who was at that time the chairman of American Airlines and was a very demonstrative Texan, knew what he wanted, and he was a friend of William Paley, Bill Paley, of CBS, and so he said to Paley he wanted to buy the entire network, and Paley said, don't do that, it would be too expensive for one thing, why not make it more cost-effective by choosing various O&O's, owned and operated CBS stations where you have the big markets, Chicago, New York, Washington, Dallas, San Francisco, Los Angeles. So they did, they bought five originally, and we were one of the originals, and that's how it came about. And then gradually they added more so that finally they had 10 in all.
Did they suggest to you the type of program that they wanted you to do?
C.R. Smith stayed up late at night. And that was the embryo. He stayed up late at night and would listen. He couldn't find much on radio. And he knew it was a good time, and he knew he probably could make a good buy. So that's how he came to Paley. And he said, let me buy the whole network, and we'll play some music that isn't offensive to anyone, that people like. And, of course, at that time, there was pretty good pop music. Not rock and roll, but pop music. And he had a kind of a liking for that. So they said, let's mix everything up. So they made it a semi-classical, classical program. And the programming would come out of New York. It was done a week at a time. But I disagreed with some of the things, and so I injected some of my own thoughts in it. And we had, probably more than anything, any other reason, we had the best listening audience because we were right in the center of the country, and we got out in all directions with our signal from CBS in Chicago. So we had the best audience. So they would send me around to San Francisco, to New York, to Los Angeles to do the show there. So it was fun. I did each one.
Oh,
once,
really?
And that was it.
But you mean just one shot?
One shot, yeah, over a weekend, usually, you know. It was kind of fun getting away. And that's the nice thing about American, too. They always said, we want you fellas to go out and see our route system. So we travel out over the route system as much as we wanted to. They were just great with us. I think I probably digressed from your original question.
No, that's what I wanted to know, is if they, how much did they program
the material for it?
Yeah.
They didn't say you have to do this, but they suggested this as a guideline, the program that came out of New York. And it worked very well. As I say, I mixed in a lot of things that the others didn't mix in. But different in Chicago.
You added your, well, certainly, it's the Chicago school. As right. They say. You added your own personality to the show.
I think so.
And, gosh, you must have, was that the first time you'd worked overnight? With any kind of a music program?
Yes, with that an overnight program, right. That's the first time I did. I enjoyed night. So even as a kid going to school, when I was going to college, I was married. I'd come back from the service. I was married, had a couple of children. So I was working in a factory, going to school during the day, driving a cab at night. So I was used to working all hours. But yes, I enjoyed the nighttime very much. And that was the first time I'd done it all night. And I did it for 15 and a half years.
It was amazing. An incredibly long run for that sort of thing.
Then I went to another place and did it for another 15 years.
That's right. You went over to WGN.
That's right.
Now, you left. Let's talk about the transition that you made from BBM to WGN. BBM was coming into all news. And you had, you were one of the survivors of a previous format, the well, you had been on through the Talk of Chicago and
that's right.
And the other
the one I always got a kick out of was The WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago. I always loved that. Because I was a kid, I listened to that. That was, to me, that was it.
Absolutely.
And when I finally got to WBBM and got to say it myself, and then I'd stumble over it half the time.
You're kidding.
No, well, I did a few times, not too often.
Well, there was a showmanship station evolved out of the Air Theater,
and then
the Talk of Chicago, and then finally News Radio
78. 780 on your radio, we used to say. Before
there were one, at one point, the WBBM was the electronic newspaper.
I don't remember that.
They called it for a very short time, because I think the Chicago newspapers got upset about that.
Yeah.
They didn't like the idea of...
Well, that's when they went all news.
All news.
All talk,
all
right?
News, yeah. But you still Music Till Dawn survived some of those things, but then eventually they wanted to go 24 hours a day news.
Mm. When I left there, I thought it was going to go on forever, because to my mind it still should be on, because it's a perfect vehicle for nighttime entertainment. But as a matter of fact, people later accused me of knowing something, that's why I left, but that wasn't it at all. The program was going great. I was getting kind of tired of working all night, and my family, most of my family was still home. They're scattered around the country now, but at that time Rudy Orsay came over to me as a go-between between Norman Ross and Tallman and me, and said, could we talk to you? So he proposed that I talk to the Tallman people about doing the all-night show over the evening show, Tallman, Tunes from Tallman, I think they call it, over at GM that Norman Ross was doing. Norman was going to go over the First National Bank, I think, as a...
Yes.
Vice President for Publicity or...
Public Affairs.
Public Affairs,
like
Public
that,
Affairs,
yeah.
So I said, let me talk to my family about it. So I talked to them about it. They said, oh, go for it, Dad, go for it. So I thought, it'd be a change of pace, because they offered me the opportunity to do a show for a half hour. I would never have to come in if I didn't want to. I could tape it all. And I said, whoa, what a change over working all night long. Six nights a week I did that, by the way, Music Till Dawn. So I finally decided I'd go, because they gave me a lot of nice little benefits. And that's the reason I went, for money and for the shorter hours. And then, of course, it went off the air about a year and a half later. But that wasn't because I had left or anything else, but because of all of the situations. They wanted to go news at CBS and BBM. Mm-hmm. And the Doyle Dane Burnback agency that was handling it was primarily a TV agency. They weren't too familiar with radio, so they were just happy to get in more into TV.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it happened. It's just one of those things.
Where was your first broadcast start? Where did you start in radio?
In radio?
Mm-hmm.
I started in, Menominee, in Marinette, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Marinette, Wisconsin. I was in high school, and I wanted to work in radio. I thought that was great. Radio, to me, was the ultimate. There was no TV then.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote to stations. I got the white radio log. Remember that white radio log?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got
every
that.
Station in the country, right?
And the names of the managers and general managers and the program directors. So I wrote to as many as I could within the area I could reach by bus or train. And I told them I had no experience, but I was happy to work for peanuts. Union people would hate me.
That's where everybody starts working for peanuts.
That's right, for the experience. Mm-hmm. And so a couple stations answered me, and I went up to Marinette, and they hired me. Stupid people, but they hired me. I'm not stupid, but, they're taking a chance on a guy who had no experience at all. And so that's the way I got going.
And from there you developed.
Then the war came on. I went down to La Crosse because fellows were leaving. And then I got to La Crosse, and they had a camp. What was the camp there? The Army camp. I can't think of the name of it. But the war had started, and the soldiers were walking up and down the street giving me dirty looks, because I was a pretty big guy. I was of the age I could have been. But I said, I'm too young, so I joined the Air Force and became a pilot.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I was a B-24 pilot, Second War.
So you served then in World
War II? Oh, yeah, I was in for quite a time over in England.
Did you see some combat?
Didn't see any combat, no. I was over there towards the tail end of the war in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I was in England, based in a 448th Bomb Group with an old group. So every time we'd load our bombs and get up and form, which took quite a considerable time, they'd call us back, abort the mission, so I never got up. Well, we finally did, the people of my ilk who came over late, we would fly all the ground officers around over the European area to see the damage and whatnot.
Oh, I see.
Then we flew the planes back. That was a good experience, flying overseas, back overseas.
You still maintain your pilot's license?
I fly a glider now.
Do you?
Sailplanes,
Does the pilot training, the air training you had in the Air Force, augur well for you as a glider pilot?
No, it doesn't, because there's such a difference between flying a four-engine bomber, which is a very heavy plane. Then it was. Now it looks like a little toy compared to the big planes, as compared to a sailplane, which is really a seat-of-the-pants thing. You have to know your weather, for one thing, and winds and thermals and whatnot. It's really fun.
So if one afternoon we look up skyward and we see a plane going along with no motors on it or any, no engine, that's good.
Somebody leaning out and screaming, help, help, that's me.
That very well could be Jay Andres.
I haven't had any troubles yet.
Jay, we know that you made such a name for yourself in the Chicago market with the Music Till Dawn program. And today you're still a very big part of radio in Chicago. And here we are on WNIB, colleagues, if you will, on the same great radio station. And you're, instead of staying up all night entertaining listeners, now you're getting up very early and entertaining people in the morning.
Yeah, well, about the time I used to wake up doing the all-night show is about the time I get up now to go to work about 2:15, 2:30. So it really isn't that much different. Actually, I'm kind of a loner. I think really, in retrospect, I am kind of a loner. So I do enjoy those hours by myself. And communicating, as you know, Chuck, with people over the air, it's like being alone, but facing somebody, one person.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you don't have to worry about your clothing, your dress. Well, you should, I guess, but with radio, you don't have to. People make up their own ideas of what you look like and your actions and whatnot. But it is kind of fun working alone, and I enjoy that in the early morning. I communicate with the folks who are in drive time early in the morning.
Well, I think that having been a great fan of yours over all the years, I know how much you enjoy what you've done because it comes across on the air. And I know that you've always made yourself accessible to the listener. People have called you. Would you call you all night long, call you in the morning, and make some comment about something, and you bring your listener into the program. Yeah, along with you. I think that's a very important part of it.
Especially with music, I think, in that it is a communication between two. Well, everything on radio is communication between two people, but music especially is a feeling. And if you can impart the feeling, that would take some of the onus away from some of the music that we play that is called classical music, that some people think, oh, it's so sad or it's so monotonous, and that's not necessarily the point. It's like a painting, for instance. You look at a painting, and if you like the composition of colors and whatnot, that's it. So you don't have to know anything about the painter or anything. That's the way I feel about music, too. And so many people are scared off by pretentious people on classical radio who think that it's such a wonderful... It's a wonderful thing, sure, but everyone should enjoy it.
Well, I think that if someone doesn't have any interest in classical music and say that maybe they'd like to develop an interest in it, I think the best classical music 101 course going around is the morning song on NIB.
Because that's nice to hear. Thank you.
You talk about the music. You listen. You say, listen for this or listen to that. He did this when it was. This is the Berlin Philharmonic or something. You say, you're telling all about it. You're talking, perhaps putting it in perspective as far as the time of this recording, something about the composer. Little bits and pieces of information imparted in a very warm and friendly manner that just you expose people to all of this sort of thing, and I think that's much better than just one big symphony after another.
I think that sort of thing is akin to chamber music players, a group of people gathered together for a friendly confrontation with particular music, all enjoying their various parts and putting it all together into a homogeneous mass. Homogeneous mass is what I mean.
Over the years with the all-night program, you must have run into problems somewhere along the line, something disastrous that happened or something very special, something positive that happened.
I remember one time when the Russian, what's the first Russian thing they sent up?
Sputnik?
Sputnik went up. We climbed up, we heard it was going to be over at a certain time, so we climbed up on the roof of the arena and watched it go over. Gosh, that was an exciting thing.
Were you broadcasting?
We were broadcasting. We put a long record on that.
We didn't broadcast. Just put a long record on. Listener, you didn't include the listener.
I told him about it later.
Yeah,
it was interesting.
Well, there was a lot of people who would be interested in that.
I had several marriage proposals that were kind of interesting. My wife and seven kids didn't think much of it, but I never made any. Of course, I always talked about my kids and my wife. This was a great part of my day. And as I said earlier, you sit there at the end of a day and you think about things that have happened. And go over the day, and then naturally it comes forth when you're talking, especially one-on-one on the radio. And so I would talk about them. Why did I get on this subject?
No, we're just talking about things that happened overnight.
That's right. I was talking about the woman down in Tennessee even had her minister write to me, ask when the date was going to be and how we were going to arrange everything. I couldn't believe it. So what did I say to that woman, I didn't to my mind, I didn't say anything. People would send me all kind of goodies from down south, too, by the way. Shelled pecans, huge boxes of pecans. The sausage man would come in with all kind of sausages. Well, you know that kind of thing.
There's nothing greater than the listener, you know.
Who participate. They want to participate. Yeah. They want to be a part of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I always enjoy meeting the public and talking to the people. I like to see the faces that I can't see when we're on the air. And it's so important to get the feedback. The last night you were on WBBM, Jay, it was the 14th of September, 1968. Actually, that's almost exactly a few months different than maybe 20 years ago.
20 years, right?
And when you signed on that night, you were on from 11 o'clock, beginning at 11 o'clock that night, there was a rather unusual beginning to your program on that. You remember that?
I'll say, sure do. The guys that I worked with were just such nice people. I don't know whether I was just fortunate or what, but everyone I worked with, just very, very nice people. And so it couldn't have been nicer to have these two guys come on and sing. Is that what you're going to do?
That's right. We've got that. We've got a tape of your, and we'll do it in a couple of seconds there, but it was the couple of engineers from, or technicians, I guess, from WBBM. Jim Mulqueeney,
Ed Nemec.
And I guess Milt Placco, who was your...
He was the engineer that night.
He was the engineer
that's
on duty that night. But these other guys sang special lyrics to your That's All.
They both had pretty nice voices, too, especially... they both had pretty nice voices.
And that was a total surprise
to
you.
That was a complete surprise, complete. That was so nice.
The... when you left BBM, were you were off radio for a short period of time, or did you
only about a week or so? I think
just a very short period of time. Go ahead.
When I came over to WGN, the program director there gave me a copy of the last night on the air, and it was really we had a real party later on. So I'm glad you. I hope you didn't put any of the later in the night of that last night.
Well, we've got a little bit of it here. We've got a little bit that we can play, and it's what most of your Music Till Dawn listeners heard. When you started, when did you start with NIB? How long have you been with us now?
Somebody told me the other day. I didn't keep track, but I think it was. Just three years, a few days ago. But the surprise to me on that last night at WBBM was that my wife had gotten all of our friends, husbands and wives together, who would always, through the years, by the way, we really worked hardships on our friends, because I would only be off on Sunday night. They all had to go to work on Monday mornings, but I talk them all into partying, staying up, going out to dinner and doing this and that, dancing and whatnot. And they all had to get up on Monday morning. I could sleep on Monday mornings. So it was nice of them all to come down then, that night, that last night. I had each of them do different things, like doing the news, do the temperature, introduction. So they all enjoyed it. They're all ham bones. But that's what the night consisted of.
Yeah.
Oh, and eating.
Well, it was a marvelous program, and what you continue to do today is wonderful. You are a treasure to Chicago radio, and while you're not bronzed in the Museum of Broadcast Communications yet here, you're too young to be bronzed. When we're here on Saturday afternoons, you know, we figure that we're just another one of the artifacts doing our show. But there's lots of folks who have had the opportunity to thank you for what you've done, but I want to add mine to that.
Thank you very much. I still hear from people about Music Till Dawn, by the way.
I'm sure.
Call up, listen to the program. Oh, you're back. What happened to you in the interim? You
know? Years go by.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to listen, and thank you very much for being with us, and we're going to listen to a clip in just a second from the beginning of your last WBBM edition of Music Till Dawn from, as I said, September the 14th of 1968. Started at 11 o'clock. We're going to hear the kind of a nice farewell from John Holtman and Frank Beeman, who close out the news, and then John... Holtman, who is still prime anchor in the mornings on WBBM, will introduce the program. And thank you, Jay Andres, for being with us
today.
Thank you.
Could I just interject a thought?
Sure.
Isaac Walton said, and I'll see if I can paraphrase this, said, if God allows us to hear such wonderful music here on earth, think of what the angels must hear.
Most appropriate. Thank you, Jay Andres.
Thank you.